So, as we were sharing yesterday, that one of the beauty of Sri Aurobindo's writings is that whatever he writes about, he brings that state so close to us, as if, we have to just do a little knock and there we can get into it. He literally brings it. It is in the original sense, the seers were supposed to be also creators. So they could create through the power of the word that state of consciousness which they were manifesting. And one can actually see that when we read in the self of mind, he lifts us into some kind of a dizzying height where remote from this world, voiceless, featureless. And now when he draws us to the depths of this creation, he is filling us with delight, as if we are actually hearing that caravan and we can experience what it is to have those tears of longing joy. So this is the beauty of Sri Aurobindo's writings. And that is why to read Savitri every day, as the mother has told us, I can't even use the word advised, she has very beautifully guided that we must read it. Even if we don't understand, it creates conditions for that state, if does not directly make us experience it. In fact, if we are a little open and receptive, it can lead us to that. The silent soul of all the world was there. So this cosmos is, this universe is his material body, this whole vast universe. And the vital worlds and the mental worlds are his breath of life. The mental world is his single thought which has entered into creation. But behind all these worlds stands he who supports this whole creation with his presence. A being lived, a presence and a power. A single person who was himself and all. So this is the divine in his, the universal divine, who enters into creation in Sharbhav, behind each finite life, behind each finite he stands and enters into this creation. This is Ashwapati seeking. So at first step, this is the first resolution of his quest, not the final resolution, but the first resolution that yes, we are not alone in this creation, but there is a presence and a power which is behind everything. A single person who was himself and all, and cherished nature's sweet and dangerous throbs. So it's like a vast drama in which he is the actor, the spectator. And in this great epic, there are not only moments which are sweet and sublime, but dangerous and ruthless moods. So Ramayana is not complete if it is only about Rama's growing up in a very nice palace and then, meeting Sita and the two looking at each other and recognizing that yes, they are eternal companions, and then they come together and all is happy ever after. There is also strength, there is also sacrifice, there is also the joy of battle and surprise. All that must come out and express itself. And behind all this, there is a delight. We have this concept of Navarasas or Dasarasas in Indian thought, where even behind things which appear vibhats, there is a joy, vibhats ras, there is a delight. It's delight which is at the base and it cherishes nature's sweet and dangerous throbs. What does it do with it? Transfiguring into beats divine and pure. So nature offers its throbs, it says, it returns it back with the purer note. It's like a jugalbandi, except that one person is not so good trying to capture, the other person keeps on changing it into the pure rhythm. So nature offers everything as a sacrifice to the eternal, to the cosmic divine, and the cosmic divine returns back. Once again, each moment, correcting it, filling it with divine joy, divine love. And to dwell in it is the first condition for realizing the integral divine. The mother in one of her messages says, when you can experience the whole world at the same time, then you can become ready to experience the divine. So this is the first step where the whole cosmos, this being experiences, because it's everything has emerged out of himself. Just as we stress on one part of a body and we experience it, but we are that totality. So this whole cosmos is come out of himself, and he is in each and everything. And here is the one whom we seek, but seek wrongly through a thousand faces, one who could love without return for love. Now it is a catchphrase, unconditional love. And everybody wants the other person to love unconditionally. But only divine can love unconditionally. Human beings are so much tied and bound to conditions. Only he who is free of all conditions, who is master of himself, who is the source of all love, only he can love unconditionally. Nothing else, nothing that is bound or caught in the trap of nature can love unconditionally. That is why they say that at the human level, if anyone can love unconditionally, it is the master, the spiritual master. Because he has touched that source of love, that fount of love. So he can love unconditionally. He doesn't need us to love him. If he allows us to love him, it's so that we can progress faster. It is to help us to, you know, from both sides, if there is an attraction and a pull. One who could love without return for love, meeting and turning to the best, the worst. This is his work. This cosmic spirit, this cosmic being, turns everything in its evolutionary journey, towards its evolutionary fulfillment. Sri Aurobindo was asked, even things like Hitler, the cosmic divine uses him also. He says, yes, in that state of consciousness. But in Hitler's state of consciousness, he is responsible for what he is doing. He clarifies. But in that state of consciousness, you see that he is using even this for the great fulfillment. So he was asked that what has he done which has helped mankind? He says he broke the old world order. So even that is required. Somebody has to come to break that old world order. He comes to break so that a new order can come. So the divine uses everything in everyone. Even not only Arjuna is his instrument, even Duryodhana is his instrument. Arjuna is a conscious instrument. He is saying become a conscious instrument. Duryodhana is an unconscious instrument. If there was no Duryodhana, one could not imagine all these arrogant, warring Kshatriyas at that point of time. Nobody could bring them together under one umbrella. So Duryodhana did a fantastic job. He got all of them together and told Sri Krishna, please, now you do the needful, including myself. So how even everything he uses and turns towards its great purpose. And those who know that, that's how they say that the greatest wisdom is to live according to the divine will. We do not understand its steps. When Rama is abandoned to the forest, there are those who cry, those who feel bad, but he says, surely there is some will of God in it. And when he goes into the forest, the advantage is that the entire Dandakaranya is freed of all the demons, which he couldn't have done had he remained in the palace of Ayodhya. Sita's abduction becomes an excuse for pulling down the ramparts of the golden Lanka. So this is how the divine works. He uses everything, turning to best the worst. Meeting and turning to the best, the worst, it healed the bitter cruelties of earth, transforming all experience to delight. How does he do it? When we go and cry, you are so cruel, in our really dark moments, why did you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? What does the divine do? He doesn't intellectually argue out with us. He doesn't explain to us. He keeps on sending delight, delight, delight. After a while, we say time heals. Time doesn't heal. It is because that delight is pulsating within, that sooner or later, it just covers us. That's his way. So he just transforms it by his touch. He doesn't need to explain big philosophies. He doesn't need to tell us, I am doing it for your good. He knows we won't understand. Because he is seeing many, many lives behind and in front. Intervening in the sorrowful paths of birth, it rocked the cradle of the cosmic child and stilled all weeping with its hands of joy. What a beautiful master we have all the time. The super, super psychiatrist who is there inside us, the divine healer, who just by his touch can heal us. Not only heal us, transform pain into delight. His touch can do that. Shobindo says in one of his aphorisms, what we call as death, he says, I saw the divine pull a child back into his arms and the mother wept because she had lost her cherished one. This is valid at this level. It's not that we don't understand it. But at that level, how the divine works, he is putting out everything, pulling back into himself. And that whole process now Sri Aurobindo will describe. How he pulls the creation towards himself through life and death and rebirth. It turned, it led, it rocked the cradle of the cosmic child and stilled all weeping with its hands of joy. Countless times one experiences. I remember once a lady who had lived in the ashram for many, many decades. She is no more now. So once someone asked her that, what kind of sadhana you do here? So can you tell us what kind of meditation? And of course, I was there and I knew now, you know, something very interesting will come because it's a very difficult question to answer. People expect, and this was a group which had come for the first time. So they expected to be told, every day morning I sit and meditate for 1.5 hours like this. And she said something very marvelous and interesting. She said, you know, every day morning we get up, whenever we have, whatever we have, the whole day we offer to her. When we are hurt inwardly, emotionally, we are pained, we go to ashram, we bow at the samadhi, and something happens and the whole cloud is lifted. When things are going fine, we go to the ashram, we bow at the samadhi and express our gratitude. This is how we do sadhana. She was suffering from cancer and she faced it in that spirit. It's amazing. So just that touch, it changes pain into delight. A little opening, little receptivity. It led things evil towards their secret good. There is no evil. At one place, Sri Aurobindo says, there is no evil. There is only good or good in its preparation. So, what we call as evil is good in its preparation. It's like, before a rose comes, the divine adorns it with thorns. So, if somebody who doesn't know the full journey, he would say, my God, such a thorny thing divine has made. He'll say, you are so impatient. I know what is necessary. If I don't give him thorns now, they will be finished very soon. Human beings will just keep plucking and throwing them away or putting them in the air. Because I have put thorns, human beings think twice before plucking them. Animals think twice before eating them. And even when people pluck, they don't dare put it into the hairs because it's thorny. So they like to offer it at God's feet. So these thorns will help him. They will save him from animals and men. So everything that we call as evil, there is only one evil, the mother says, it is something which is not in its proper time and place. There is no other evil. Anything, if we put it in its right place and right time, it changes its character. And that is the whole tragedy or the problem of this universe, because the manifestation is in space and time. Everything must be arranged according to a writ, but because every moment the manifestation is changing, it's difficult to do that because of the ignorance and other things. But that is the only evil. When Krishna was asked in the Rajasu Yajna, what job should we give to Duryodhana? Yudhishthira asks him, because it is Yudhishthira's Yajna. He says, what job should I give to Duryodhana? He says, very simple. make him sit on the daan patra. He says, why? He says, he hates you and is very jealous of you. At the same time, he is very generous. He will distribute with both hands. That's what you want. He says, yes. So put him there. If you put one of your brothers, he will not give. He will think, oh, after all, it is my brother's money. This fellow will give freely. Only divine can think like that. Put him in the right place. If you put somebody in the wrong place, he will be a disaster. Even the best of persons will be a disaster. Or at wrong, in wrong time. There are things for which there is a time. And they are perfectly valid at that point of time. But they become anachronistic. And they become outdated. And therefore evil when time changes its leaf. So this is where Shobindra is revealing how he turns all evil into secret good, because everything has its secret good. There is nothing without its secret good. It turned ragged falsehood into happy truth. Its power was to reveal divinity by whatever way, whatever means. This is a very interesting story of course, it's also in with one of the ladies who lived in the ashram long back, Jyotirmayidi, in 1930s. But a similar incident in another person's life, which is shorter. He was Yogananda's disciple. And after a while, he said, I just want to go out and, you know, experience world. So, all right. So he went. After 2-3 years, he felt very miserable. So he came back. And Yogananda told his foremost disciple that tell him that he is not allowed anymore inside. And they say that when he told this to convey, he was weeping on one side. But at the same time, he said, tell him to not to come back here. So the disciple couldn't understand. If you are feeling so much for him, why don't you just simply keep him here? He said, no, he has refused the grace. He has to experience the world in its bittermost poison to be ready once again. So that is how the divine prepares us. And he goes with us, and through this journey, he leads us towards the secret good. It doesn't mean that immediately he changes things into racked falsehood into happy truth. He is patient. He will wait 1,000 years if need be, but eventually he'll fulfill that task. That's why there is hope for all of us. Otherwise there would be no hope. Infinite coeval with the mind of God, it bore within itself a seed, a flame. This is the birthplace of our soul. That's why he is our true father, mother, beloved, even the child. Because though he is, we are born from him, but in the process of evolution, he is the last to be born within us. That is why Agni is described as both the Purvadeva as well as the child who is born in the fugitive years. It bore within itself a seed, a flame, a seed from which the eternal is newborn. And what he has put in that seed? His whole eternity. Everything, the whole infinity of the divine is within the seed. And that will manifest and blossom over a period of time. Just as if tree shuts itself within a seed. So in that little seed, that little spark of the divine, deathless flame, immortal Dehi within us, every potentiality of God is packed, and that is released into the adventure of time and space to blossom through experience of life. It bore within itself a seed, a flame, a seed from which the eternal is newborn, a flame that cancels death in mortal things. So that's why, because we bear within us that magic key, that's why we forget to die. The world forgets to die. Even though we see every day that everybody dies, but we believe that somehow we will not die. We don't believe it, but more or less we live like that. Every time we say, yes, yes, tomorrow surely we'll meet you at this time. We assume that we will be living to see tomorrow. Even we make plans for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. because we live in that, we are forgetful of that death because it's there. It cancels death. How does it cancel death? By that. And actually, if we allow our mind and life and body to be governed by that, it can actually grant us that immortality. That's what the mother explains. It has that power in it. So, in that state, how does one experience life? All grew to all kindred and self and near, because there is nothing but souls. There we are not acting our roles here. It's like when we go to a cinema and we see a movie, so there is a hero, the villain, all this is happening. When the drama is over, we have that poem of Sri Aurobindo, what is this talk of slayer and of slain? So after the show is over, both the hero and the villain come back and they greet each other. Very nice. Yes, very nice. Come, let's have a treat. So there is no fight, no quarrel, because everything is experienced at soul level. All grew to all kindred and self and near. The intimacy of God was everywhere. No veil was left. No brute barrier inert. These veils of mind and life and body, they were no more there. So time and space had no meaning. It's only in this state that one can really love unconditionally, and however far one may be, in terms of distance, there is no separation, because there is no separation in that state. Distance could not divide, time could not change. A fire of passion burned in spirit depths. A constant touch of sweetness linked all hearts. The throb of one adoration's single bliss in a rapt ether of undying love. So it is nothing but love, and in that all experience each other as kindred self. Everybody is a relative. We have so many relatives, billions of relatives. But of course, earthly relatives are very difficult to manage. So probably divine has limited them. So, but those relatives, the divine family, that is a different consciousness altogether, because everybody loves and experiences the intimacy of God everywhere. This is what we seek, to lie down in that heart. That's why one can understand why Sahanadi, when she wrote to Sri Aurobindo, she said, I don't know how to meditate, but every time I sit, I imagine that I am sitting in the mother's lap. Sri Aurobindo wrote back, it is one of the best possible forms of meditation, because that is the inner reality of our being. This is what our soul longs. It has come from there. It is attracted to that. In that state, it is forever in its lap. There is no sense of separation. A fire of passion burned in spirit depths. A constant touch of sweetness linked all hearts. The throb of one adoration's single bliss in a rapt ether of undying love. An inner happiness abode in all. A sense of universal harmonies. A measureless, secure eternity of truth and beauty and good and joy made one. This is the nature of our psychic being. Truth and beauty and joy and good. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, Anandoham. It's its very nature. That's why the more we touch our individual soul, spontaneously we feel joy, spontaneously we feel love. And that is why those who realize this oneness with the divine, the Gita describes it so beautifully, that what are the signs of bhakta? He says one of them is that he loves everyone and everyone loves him. Now, he loves everyone is understandable. Why should everyone love him? Because of that touch of oneness with he who is the source of all love. It is a spontaneous interchange which takes place because of that touch. Its nature is sweetness. A sense of universal harmonies, of a measureless secure eternity, of truth and beauty and good and joy made one. There was the welling core of finite life. So it's from there that the formless changes into form. It is the borderland. In the overmind we experience it, where formless changes into form. All that is finite, the Sharobhava of the Gita, a formless spirit became the soul of form. So psychic being has a form. So as a psychic little flame, it enters. That spirit enters and takes birth into this world, terrible and sweet. And just because it is born out of that ansha, an ansha of that, therefore, just as the divine cherishes the sweet and dangerous throbs of nature, our psychic also cherishes the sweet and dangerous throbs of life. It knows that through all this, there is the revelation of divinity. That is why, whatever may be the condition, seldom human beings say it's better to die. There is always hope. There is always something which struggles. There is always something which takes the challenge. And the closer we get to it, the more we begin to live in that state of consciousness. Because the soul takes us through everything. Same thing the cosmic divine does for the universe. And even for group life, all the group life, the nation's soul, they all refer back to the cosmic divine. He brings them out of himself and takes it back to himself. And through all this turmoil and rise and fall of civilizations, he fulfills his great work. Exactly what the individual soul does for man, taking him even through difficult passages. We have that story of Socrates where he was told that everything is ready. Why don't you escape? I have bribed everyone. So Socrates says, no, I would prefer to take the hemlock. Now, it would appear very stupid decision, but one who is united with his soul may take a decision which appears very stupid, because that is the path it has chosen for its evolution. Sri Aurobindo says is one of the places that when he was asked, if divine is behind all things, why there is failure, etc. He says, what if failure suits his purpose best? And then he gives the example of Sri Krishna, who runs away from the battlefield, because he does not want the whole army to be massacred. So when Kalyavan is face to face with him, the legendary Greek who comes all the way, or the Persian who is brought into India by Jarasandh, and he says, no Indian has the power to defeat this army of Mathura under Krishna and Balram. So Krishna knows that even though one would conquer, there would be a great massacre. So he starts running. And Kalyavan runs after him, saying him all kinds of words. That is how his name is Ranshod, one of the names. He runs away from the battlefield. So Krishna doesn't mind. He says, okay, you call me with names. So Kalyavan is running behind him with all kinds of abuses. And Krishna is running further and further. So everybody is surprised. Why should he do it? But he knows that this will suit his purpose best. He takes him to a cave where sage Muchkund, he is a warrior in Devasur Sangram. And after fighting for many, many decades, when Indra says, ask for any boon, Muchkund says, I want to sleep. I am very sleepy. Of course, it's a symbolic sleep into the higher trance of, it's the trance of bliss. He says, okay, you go to this cave and be there, and nothing will disturb you, because you have to be in that state where nothing can disturb you. Then only you can live in that trance of bliss. And if anyone disturbs you, then he'll be burnt to ashes immediately. So Muchkund is in that trance of bliss in that cave, and Krishna knows. So he runs and goes into the cave and hides. So Kalyavan, like a fool, goes inside, and sure enough, looking at Muchkund, he feels he must be the one. It's a dark cave, and kicks him. So he comes out of his sleep and Kalyavan is burnt to death. So divine has his ways. It's a symbolic story that he chooses his methods. And we cannot understand at that point of time why things are happening. And yet he leads us through everything towards its secret good. Just a few lines, then we will stop. All there was soul or made of sheer soul stuff. So that world is the psychic world. A sky of soul covered a deep soul ground. Means everything was alive with that presence. What is that sky of soul? Everything throbs with that presence. It's not a sky of a material touch or a vital sky which is colored. Vital sky is very colored with various kinds of colors. When one enters into the vital world, one sees many colored skies. or not a sky which is like the sky of mental world, bare, indifferent. Not the physical world sky, drifting with clouds, but a sky made of soul stuff. If one looked up, one saw the divine presence and felt a thrill. If one looked around, one felt the intimacy of God, because everything is made of soul stuff. All here was known by a spiritual sense. Someone asked Aurobindo, this feeling that we have sometimes, that feeling of love or a good feeling when we go to the samadhi, or not samadhi that time, we have nice feeling. Is it a spiritual experience or it is just our imagination? He says, why do you doubt it? Just because it is felt by another sense? We say sometimes, oh, I feel very nice. It's not the material sense which feels it. It's not the vital sense which feels it. It's not the mind's imagination. It's not that we imagined and said, I must feel good, I must feel good. Nothing. We walk inside and suddenly, for a moment, we feel very nice. We use words, nice, good, it's a way of saying. But what is that which feels? The spiritual sense. So just as there are material senses, in fact, the material senses are nothing but the spiritual sense which is in the trap of matter. And they must be revealed. There are vital senses, mental senses. So also there are spiritual senses. And when spiritual senses are awakened, they feel spiritual things. So when we say, I feel divine presence inside, the material scientist will say, what do you mean? Can you show me the divine presence? We cannot like Hanuman tear off the chhati and say, here it is. It is not seen by material eyes. It is not felt by material senses. It's felt by spiritual sense. In that world, in that plane, everything is felt by spiritual sense. Thought was not there, but a knowledge near and one. So one knew everything not by thought. How does the soul know things? It will say, I feel, that is how it is. So if you say, how do you say it by analysis. Sorry, I don't know, but I know it by a kind of inner intuition. It turns out to be true much later. Because its knowledge is not a thought knowledge. Seized on all things by a moved identity, a sympathy of self with other selves, the touch of consciousness on consciousness, and beings look on being with inmost gaze. So why does Sri Krishna choose Arjuna? Outwardly one would say he was not the best of human beings. Yudhishthira was more truthful. He was honest to a default, compassionate, forgiving. Bhima was stronger. Bhishma was more knowledgeable. Sahadeva was more meditative. Of all the people, why he has to choose Arjuna? Perhaps he knew that if he chooses Yudhishthira, he will spend his time arguing. Is it right? Is it wrong? Every moment he will ask Krishna, and Krishna would never be able to satisfy his queries. If he chose Bhima, he would say, I am going to smash this whole thing and in the process get killed. Sahadev will sit on the battlefield and begin to meditate and say, God will do everything. Bhishma will say, it doesn't matter what I do, this side or that side, all is the divine. Arjuna was the most sensible because he said, I surrender to you, you tell me what is to be done and I'll do. And that is why life after life, Krishna says, I have chosen you for my instrument. It's not only in this life, you don't remember, I remember. This is a knowledge by identity. It's not by outer appearances of good and bad. If in terms of human defects, Arjuna had more defects than Yudhishthira. Yet the divine chose him for his instrument. And heart laid bare to heart without walls of speech. And the unanimity of seeing minds in myriad forms luminous with the one God. So if you really want to understand each other, best is not to argue, not to discuss, we all know this, but to live in contact with the soul. The more we are in contact with it, the more we will understand. We all know it, we all forget it. We have to learn it again and again. That true understanding only comes here. All the rest is superficial understanding. By discussion, we don't understand very often, we only complicate things. Because each one puts a little more mask. Everyone justifies his standpoint. But here there is a true understanding. So just as thought was not there in that spiritual life, but another way of knowing. Similarly, life was not there but an impassioned force. Our life depends on breathing, feeling from a, you know, we must experience things in a certain way, then we feel we are alive. But there, one experiences that impassioned force, finer than fineness, deeper than the deeps, felt as a subtle and spiritual power. In ordinary life, we need power to display itself, to feel that we are powerful. But how the divine, you know, expresses his power? Again and again, I am reminded of our samadhi in the most unimposing manner. 5 feet away and we have all the chaotic chappals around and the bathroom just next door. And yet it is there as a seat of power. What a unassuming way. And that is the power that comes from the depths. One knows. Shubhendu at one place says the divine can afford to be weak. Why? Because he knows he is all powerful. He knows anytime he can change the rules of the game. So he says, okay, you want to beat me? Let me see how much you can go. When I rebound back, then you won't know where to stand. Even in his stillness, there is a power. We know the story of the Bamiyan Buddha, which was blasted by the Talibans and aircrafts come all the way from across the seas and destroy a whole nation. That is the silent power of the soul. It doesn't depend on anything external. Those who live in their soul consciousness know that nothing can happen to them. That power comes from within. A quivering out from soul to answering soul, a mystic movement, a close influence, a free and happy and intense approach of being to being with no screen or check, without which life and love could never have been. Not only is that life just an impassioned force, but it is the source of all life and love. If that was not there, there would be no love and life anywhere on earth. So it is the source of that, yet it is finer than fineness, deeper than depths. So thought, life, what about body? What is the form of beings there? Body was not there, for bodies were needed not. So why do we need body? To hide, to defend. Defend, body, mother says, is the biggest defense against all kinds of forces. If there are no forces which are dangerous, inimical, threatening, then why does one need a body? If there is nothing we need to conceal, because all is soul and spirit, why does one need a body? So body was not there, for bodies were needed not. The soul itself was its own deathless form. So there is a form, but not the way we have these fixed, rigid, material bag, which we call as the body. And met at once the touch of other souls without hands, close, blissful, concrete, wonderfully true. So when we live in this state, we don't, feel that is the divine really loving us, because we feel that touch constantly. This is the story of one of the sadhaks here, who actually knew his event, the moment of departure, and he would not go even for darshans. So somebody felt, what is this, he told to the mother that he doesn't come for your darshan. She says, he doesn't need it. All the time he lives within me and all the time I am in him. That is also a state of consciousness. Because in that sense, we are constantly in God's embrace. So Shubhendu is revealing to us, the touch of other souls, close, blissful, concrete, wonderfully true. It doesn't need that material closeness. As when one walks in sleep through luminous dreams, and conscious knows the truth their figures mean, there where reality was its own dream, he knew things by their soul and not their shape. How beautiful this is. In dreams, if we have to, it's not by the shape that we know, but we know that this is representing that. Of course, after a certain degree of development. That's not the form, But the movement inside, the movement of fear, the movement of anger, the movement of lust, the movement of delight, the movement of peace, the Godward movement, one knows. And that is not by the form. The form is only a device. One knows the movement by kind of inner sense. So there, one did not need that only if you touch the hand, yes, yes, you are so nice. If you are not speaking at all, what kind of a nirmohi you are, who has no feeling at all inside. There one doesn't need to speak, and yet feeling, thoughts, everything is revealed to each other. And then Sri Aurobindo gives his master stroke, after which we'll stop. Don't feel like stopping. As those who have lived long made one in love. When people live together, even sometimes their faces begin to resemble each other. So he's giving that example. As those who have lived long made one in love, need word nor sign for heart's reply to heart. So when people live together initially, first 6 months or 1 year of marriage is a turbulent time. Everything is misunderstood because there is a different orientation. But after 20 years, oh, this means something else. Oh, this anger, it's just a momentary, transient storm in a corner of the boundless self. So that is why one can say, oh, this is not anger. It's actually love. But, you know, one doesn't understand. But initially, it is not Mahakali's love. It is Rudra manifesting in its fullness. But after a while, one knows what is there behind it. So heart replies to heart. Because there is a spontaneous knowledge. So Sri Aurobindo is giving us that very earthly example to make it clear to us. As those who have lived long made one in love. Both things are necessary, not just living long, but also made one in love. One can live together all one's life, but yet very far. Need word nor sign for heart's reply to heart. He met and communed without bar of speech with beings unveiled by material frame. So this is the unity and the identity. Each one is distinct, and yet there is a perfect unity and understanding which we all seek. So next time when we say that I wish someone understood me perfectly, it means we are seeking the soul. Because it's only the soul which can perfectly understand itself and others, and only the divine can understand us, and the soul can understand the divine. So we'll stop here and continue tomorrow further.